Accession number 11294, real 4.
Commander, shoot real 4.
There was a grenade in the filler cap, which was a fused grenade, and then on the tail end of the drop tank there was a clamp fastened on, and that had another grenade in it. And the idea being that when you dropped the drop tank from the aircraft, it had no aerodynamic properties of its own. It had no tail fins or anything like that. And the arming wires would pull out, which meant the grenades were then armed. And when it hit the ground, one of those grenades was going to be behind the mass of jelly. And because it's had a greater mass for its size than the jelly, it would overtake the jelly after it hit the ground and would explode in the jelly and set fire to it. Well, we went down to Melbourne to see a demonstration of this. Unfortunately, it didn't work very well, and none of the attempts came off. They eventually had to set fire to it just to show you. I mean, they literally set fire to the jelly on the ground to show us what would happen. Well, when we were due to fly out to the ship, we put one of these blaze bombs on one of the aircraft to show our captain, who was still Michael M. Denny, what would happen with one of these things, because they would operate just as well if they hit the sea as if they when they hit the land. We dropped this thing alongside the ship and it duly went off in a nice blaze of flame and smoke. But in fact, we never used these things operationally. And I think the commander ops in the ship was a little disappointed that one corner of his hangar was taken up by a thing that looked like a donkey engine, which was used for mixing the petroleum and jelly and took up the place of an aircraft. As I say, we eventually never used the things.
There's always been a certain amount of controversy over napalm. How did you feel about the possibility of using it?
Well, it certainly would have been a good weapon against certain types of target. If you had store huts or something like that to attack, you'd certainly set them on fire because you had to go in very, very low and you were going to hit them. It wasn't like conventional bombing, it was more like skip bombing. But I say we never used them, we never really thought very much about it. It was later on when they were used as flamethrowers and all that sort of thing that I think all the nausea came out about them. Anyhow, they were never used by any of our aircraft. Well, the 27th of June saw us off to sea again. And this time we were doing exercises at sea from Victoria. So the other ships hadn't joined us at this time. But as the ships joined us, we went back up through the Admiralty Islands and up into the Pacific area off Japan, where we started operating against Japan itself. And the first flight that I did was on the 17th of July, where we did what was called a ramrod. A ramrod is a strafing, low-level strafing attack on airfields. But unfortunately, the weather was extremely bad that day, and we didn't really get anything out of it. The same occurred later on in the day when I had to do a CAP. There was obviously nothing going to get anywhere near us, so we landed fairly early on that.
And was this against the southern Japanese islands?
Well, most of the attacks were around the inland sea at this time, which was the main island, Honshu. During our operations off the mainland, we were part of a very large fleet. There was the British Pacific Fleet there, but there were also three American fleets operating there. And we had 19 aircraft carriers there, and at one stage actually had 1,000 aircraft in the air. So it was quite a sight. The opposition from the Japanese was very, very low level. In fact, we had no more kamikaze attacks on our fleet and saw very little by way of opposition over the fleet itself. Over over Japan itself, again, we had no attacks by other aircraft on our aircraft. Of course, there was a lot of anti-aircraft fire. I think the point was that they had lost so many aircraft in trying to defend the various islands on the way up through the Pacific, the Americans advancing up through the Pacific, and that they were also obviously very short of fuel, perhaps partly due to our efforts at Palembang. So most of our attacks, as I say, were these ramrods, where the main purpose of that was to find aircraft and damage them on the airfields or wherever we could. And the first really successful attack we had was on the 24th of July, when we went to an airfield called Takamatsu, which again is near the inland sea, and attacked the dispersal shelters there. Unfortunately, when you're doing a ramrod, you don't really get a chance to see what damage you've done. You're a flash across the field and you're gone before. But we did find a seaplane base there, where we set fire to one of their auxiliary vessels and also to a four-engine flying boat. And these flights, because our fleet was the furthest one out to sea, tended to be rather long. That particular flight on the 24th, I was airborne over 4 hours. And then later in the day, did another ramrod, this time over an anchorage, which lasted for 3 hours and 15 minutes. So by the end of the day, I'd had quite a lot of flying. This time, they actually put some bombs on us. I say we'd never done any bombing, never had any training in bombing, so our tendency was to pick on a nice big target, let the thing go, and then say, thank goodness, now we can get on with something we do know about. This time we went into an anchorage and went after motor luggers, which alongside or near the beaches, across a couple of airfields, strafing the dispersal shelters, and another situation where there were luggers in a harbour which we strafed, and a couple of radio stations. The next day, on the 25th, the weather wasn't very good, and quite a few of the strikes were not able to reach their targets. But late in the afternoon, we did get some attention from Japanese aircraft, and it appears that one came over and released a balloon, which they reckoned was a homing balloon, and other aircraft would home on the balloon and find their way into the fleet. Early in the evening, some Japanese aircraft came over, and Hellcats from Indomitable shot them down. Well, that in fact was the first time that they'd come anywhere near us since we'd arrived off Japan. I don't know about the American fleet, but it was the first time they'd come near the British fleet.
Was there any attempt to shoot the homing balloon down?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. This is something that we learned afterwards as to how it had been done. I presume they developed it through the radar picture. Well, then we moved on to the 28th of July, where again they put bombs on us, and this time we picked on a factory to drop them on. Well, we hit the factory all right, but at the bottom of our dive we discovered that in fact it was pretty well devastated anyhow, presumably by American superforts, and went on over a series of airfields. The only opposition we got to these attacks was anti-aircraft fire, and most of us were coming back with small holes in the aircraft. Fortunately, they didn't hit anything vital. One of the, on the particular flight on the 28th, unfortunately, one of the shots that hit my aircraft damaged my cameras, my PR cameras, so I didn't get any pictures out of that one. On the 30th of July, we were off again, but this time we had to fly right across Japan to get to our targets. They were on the north coast, and they were naval targets on the far side of Japan, but we picked up some aircraft on airfields on the way back. And it was just after this that we learned that Dusty Rhodes had been awarded a DSC apiece for our efforts.
So the citation says it was for operations against enemy airfields on Sakishima, Gunta, and northern Formosa.
That's right. The we had a little bit of interference from the weather at this point when there was a typhoon swanning around. Apparently some of the American carriers, which have an overhang at the forward end of the flight deck, were damaged by heavy seas getting underneath the overhang and lifting the flight deck. But we survived quite happily. Our flight decks were fared in, and apart from the fact that it was rather rough, we didn't sustained much damage. A few aircraft broke loose in the hangars and were damaged, but that was about it. Well, by the 7th of August, we were again operating in the northern Honshu area, but by now, of course, the first atomic bomb had been dropped. So on the 9th of August, we were operating in the northern Honshu area, but we didn't do, I didn't do any flights over Japan. They were all combat air patrols over the fleet. However, on the 10th of August, we went in again with another ramrod, but the weather was still pretty awful, and we had to use opportunist targets. We did get a railway engine and some goods trains. By the 11th of August, the second atomic bomb had been dropped, and in fact we had ceased flying operations over Japan by then. And on the 12th of August, Victorious was off back towards Sydney. Well, that rather upset our skipper, because Victorious was the only carrier which had done all the operations, both in iceberg and off Japan. The other carriers had all been relieved from at various times, and he thought that we'd earned the right to go into Tokyo Bay. Anyhow, the admiral wasn't aboard our ship, because in fact our captain was the senior captain of the carriers, and the admiral was aboard Indomitable, I think it was, or Indefatigable, I'm not quite sure. But the upshot of it was that we left the area and set off back to Sydney. As far as we were concerned, the war was over.
What did you know at the time about the dropping of the atomic bombs? How did you get the news?
Simply that they had been dropped, and we obviously had some idea of the amount of damage that had been done, and that it wasn't until the 15th of August that the Allied commanders actually ordered the offensive to cease. But it was fairly obvious that the war was over before that, and that the Japanese were looking for a settlement, a surrender. And, of course, on the 15th of August, we spliced the main race, which is the one time when the officers are allowed to tot as well.
This was VJ Day.
Well, it was for us. I don't know that it was actually declared as VJ Day, but it certainly was as far as we were concerned. Well, when we got back down off Sydney, we flew the aircraft ashore to Bankstown, which is an airfield just outside Sydney, and that was the end of flying as far as we were concerned. In fact, the aircraft, all our Corsairs, were lease-lend aircraft, and as such there must have been some agreement about them being used after the cessation of hostilities, because I gather that they were all ditched at sea. They're all loaded back into ships and taken out to sea and thrown over the side eventually. So there must have been some sort of an agreement about lease-lend aircraft not being used after that.